to appreciate if well, if apologies can be submitted on time, depending. We know that there are circumstances beyond anybody's control, but I think as we move on in the term, we'll explain the importance of apologies being circulated on time. We will now hand over to the ministry, and that's Zulu, so that's, I don't want to lead the, so first, whether you want to make an overview before the presentation, and then we allow the teacher to do that. I'll hand over to you.
Thanks, Chairperson, honorable members, and officials of both Parliament and the Department. I just want to make a short remark which says, my experience is that no matter how hard issues might be, if you have a good working relationship between the ministry, the department, and the portfolio committee, we're going to be able to deal with the challenges. And it is your duty to do an oversight over us. Sometimes it's uncomfortable. Sometimes you are going to fight us and dress us down. But I'm coming from that tradition which says the accountability of everybody is very important. Accountability of your parliament, accountability of the ministry and the department, all of us have to account. So I don't take it lightly when I come to this particular forum, either to present or to answer questions on various issues. I'll always take it very, very seriously. And that's also the culture which I want to inculcate even with all the officials, that they must take parliamentary oversight very, very seriously and always be present in the meetings. Because we're overstretched sometimes with the number of responsibilities. We were discussing with the Deputy Minister that we must always be present whenever there is some presentation, even if it's by the department. If both of us cannot be there, at least one of us must be there, so that we listen properly what the issues are. And so that we can continue with our mandate. There's going to be a lot of very hard issues we have to look at, especially when we talk about implementation. It's my view that it's enough now, honorable members, on the policies. We can't come up with new policies. What we need is the implementation of the old policies which were there. Even on the new added part, which we are still conceptualizing, of e-employment. Even there are lots of programs, but the issue, we don't know what is happening in those programs. We know in some of them, but on some of them we don't. And they are located in the different areas. One of the questions, when somebody said, what employment programs are you having? I said, no, the first question should be, where are the tools of employment creation? Are they with this department, or are they lying all over in the different departments? Even if you look at the various public employment programs, that would include public works, CWP, this community works program, that would include a hot debate. I was asking Sam, because he's one of the people who have long been in this department, what happened? What was the intention of moving the CITAS from the Department of Labor to higher education? And I even said, but still, that should not be the debate. the debate should be, are they delivering those structures we've put in place in terms of developing people's skills so that they can be able to fit in the work situation? I might be wrong, DG, I might be wrong, Sam, but my little experience with the CETAs is that they've just become extended to be bursary funders instead of skills development. Some of the work, or what is so-called programs, are a joke. Some people run away with millions coming up with stupid crash courses, I'm sorry to put it like that. And after that, the people are not employable because of some of those programs. We need to talk about quality programs, which are going to make people be able and be linked to the employers and so on. But those are just a few words which I thought I should before the DG talks to this. But maybe to indicate that when we had a meeting with the president on the reconfigured departments, it became very clear that the budget has already been presented in 1920. However, there might be in the process some realignment and take on board the new SONA priorities and so on. But remember, this is what was submitted long ago, before there was people who might be lucky, might be those of the new departments or those who were late in submitting their APPs to Parliament. However, in the process, we will be interacting with you where we've done some realignment and so on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. Over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and Minister, for the introductory words. Chairperson, I will take it that the first part of the presentation, which deals with the introduction, vision and mission of the department, has been read. And if members have questions to that regard, we will then respond to those questions. So I'll go straight to the programs of the department and the entities, which is in slide 9. The Department of Labor has the following programs. Of course, the administration, the inspection and enforcement services, the public employment services, got labor market policy and industrial relations, and we've got...
Sorry, just to interrupt, Madam Chair, just if we could refer to pages as opposed to slides.
Sorry, slide.
Because the slide 9 is not appearing on my page. It seems to black out. So if you could just refer to page, sorry.
Page. Right at the right-hand corner, you see the preceding slide is slide number 8.
No,
top right.
Why don't we do this? Oh, it's very fine now, I see. But I think the in terms of pages, that would be much better, because it's only now that I'm seeing the small 9 and 10, but it's fine. In terms of our documents, we're on page 5. But in terms of the slide,
yeah,
it's slide 9. Okay, thank you.
Not properly populated.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Sorry for that, Honorable Members. We have the programs of the Department of Labor on slide 9. And program number 5 and 6 are the two Schedule 3 public entities of the department, which are not here today, which the committee will most probably invite separately. That's Unemployment Insurance Fund and the Compensation Fund. So the next slide is the program, and it's a continuation of the program and entities. We also have... four other entities that support the work of the Department of Labor and Department of Employment and Labor. It's the Commission for Conciliation, Mediation and Arbitration, CCMA, National Economic Development and Labor Council, NEDLAC, Productivity South Africa, Supported Employment Enterprises. We contribute to the following government outcomes. Outcomes number four, which is decent employment through inclusive economic growth. Outcome number five, which is a skilled and capable workforce to support an inclusive growth path. Outcome number 11, create a better South Africa, a better Africa, and a better world. Outcome 12, an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service. And outcome 13, an inclusive and responsive social protection system. Outcomes 14, transforming society and uniting the country. So from those outcomes, we have the following Department of Labor's goals, which is to promote occupational health services, contribute to decent employment, that's part of outcome one, protect vulnerable workers, strengthen occupational safety protection, promote sound labor relations, monitor the impact of legislation, development of the occupational health and safety policies. And on outcomes five, we contribute to decent employment creation, and that's the responsibility of the public employment services. Outcomes 11, we strengthen multilateral and bilateral relations, which is implemented by labor policy and industrial relations. Outcomes 12, we strengthen the institutional capacity of the department, which is implemented by administration. Outcomes 13, we strengthen social security, and which is the responsibility of the unemployment insurance fund and the compensation fund. And outcomes 14, we promote equity in the labor market, which is the responsibility of inspection enforcement services and labor policy and industrial relations. The next slide, Chairperson, is the footprint of the department. We have, of course, head office, which is in Pretoria, and two funds, which are based in Pretoria. We have nine provincial offices. We have 126 labor centers, which span across the country. We have we provide services using our mobile units and buses to get to the places that are often very difficult to reach. That's how we service those places. We provide services in 72 of the 139 Tusong centers. And also, if we're invited by any member of parliament that has picked up issues, we make ourselves available. I'm going to go straight, Chair, to the strategic plan. The next page is just the indication of the four programs that we have in the department. And the next page is just the strategic objectives and the process that we followed in arriving at the strategic objectives and the APP, the baselines that we've used to arrive at some of these indicators. So I'm not going to go through that. I want to go straight to the strategic plan and to the APP, Chairperson. So which will be in slide. So if you go to slide 30, you'll see the Department of Labor annual performance plan for 2019 to 2020. Again, the page, slide 31 is the program of the department, and the next slide reflects the reporting period. We have targets that are set for the whole year, which is annual, and we have quarterly targets. So if you go to communication, the first one, which falls under administration, we want to have effective communication and marketing of the departmental work. And the target there is that we will have a communication annual work plan, which is approved 100%, and the 100% implementation of the annual work of this plan. And we have disaggregated the target into four quarters. The next one is the number of annual financial statements and interim financial statement comply per year that comply with guidelines issued by the National Treasury. So the target there is that one AFS by 31st May and three IFS 30 days after each quarter, and we have disaggregated that into four quarters. The third one is cases of irregular, fruitless, and wasteful and or unauthorized expenditure detected per year reported to the accounting office. All cases which are detected must be reported, and that should happen throughout the year. And we don't only end there, we investigate and take action when necessary. The next one is program two, which is inspection and enforcement services. For this financial year, which is 2019 to 2020, the inspection and enforcement services intends to conduct 220,692 inspections, and of course disaggregated into four quarters, and the targets are carried by the different provinces. So Eastern Cape has been allocated a target of 23,988, up to the Western Cape, which is allocated 23,400. The allocation is purely based on the resources that each province has. So the bigger the province in terms of the numbers of its inspectors, that province will carry more work. The next performance indicator is percentage of non-compliant employers of those inspected served with notices in terms of the relevant labor legislation within 14 calendar days of the inspection. So what we do when inspectors go out and they pick up that an employer is not complying, the law says we must issue them with contravention notices if that's in line with occupational health and safety legislation, if it's in the issue relating to the national minimum wage basic conditions of employment, we then issue them with either an undertaking. And if we have issued them with an undertaking, they've accepted that undertaking, it means they need to honor that undertaking. If they don't honor that undertaking, we then refer the matter now to the CCMA, because we no longer take matters directly to the labor court unless it's a matter relating to the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. But if it's a national minimum wage, it's adjudicated by the CCMA. So we want to make sure that all of those are issued with notices. The percentage of non-compliant employers who fail to comply with the served notices preferred for prosecution within 30 calendar days. As indicated, there's work that must be done to process these notices leading up to referral to court or referral to the CCMA. And then percentage of reported incidents investigated and finalized within prescribed timeframes. Employers are required to report incidences or accidents to the Department of Labor and to the Compensation Fund. And in instances where, before I say that, maybe let me indicate that the employers are supposed to keep registers of incidences and accidents and steps that they've taken to prevent reoccurrence of those incidences. So once these cases are referred to us, we then have to investigate them and refer them to the National Prosecuting Authority for them to make a decision whether to prosecute or not. We don't make that decision as a Department of Labor. We rely on the NPA to make that decision. And the reason why we put a 70%, it's not like we don't want to finalize all cases. I'm sure members will be aware that of incidences like the Greyston breach that have taken number of months to finalize because of the time that it takes to put together the experts and the lawyers and all that. So it takes a bit of time, and it sometimes will take more than a year to get these things finalized. But the point we're trying to make is that we investigate and finalize all incidences, but it may be the finalization may fall outside of the reporting period. The number of we then go to public employment services. What we do here, one of the work that we do is to register work seekers. We have an employment services system where we register work seekers. So we have a target there and we have disaggregated it to the provinces. The number of work and learning opportunities registers on ESSA per year. Employers do come to the department to register learning opportunities, and we must then register those on the employment services system so that we're able to match the work seekers with those opportunities. The system can do that automatically, depending on whether the skills required versus the applicant, you know, they do match. Then we have disaggregated the target as reflected there, firstly in terms of quotas and also disaggregated it to provinces. We have the number of registered work seekers provided with employment counseling per year. So what we do is these work seekers are provided with vocational counseling. We have vocational counselors that are located in these 126 labor centers that I spoke about. And of course, that is also disaggregated into quotas and different provinces. The number of registered work and learning opportunities filled by registered work seekers per year. And one of the things that you will notice that the number of work seekers that are registered and the learning opportunities are much higher than the number of registered work seekers and placed in those opportunities. And that's largely because of the difficulties that we have with regards to skills mismatch and also the structural nature of the unemployment that we have. And this is the work that we do jointly with the CCM, with the CITAS, to try and close the skills mismatch. Program 4, Labor Policy and Industrial Relations. In this year, we want to publish the Employment Equity Register. There's a requirement that employers must report, and once they have reported, we must put together the public employment, the public register, and also the minister must publish the Employment Equity Report, which would have been compiled by the Employment Equity Commission. So that still has to happen because the minister has just recently joined the department, so there needs to be a meeting between the two, the minister and the Employment Equity Commission. So we also have a target for 2019-20, so that by the 31st of March, again, the Employment Equity Report and Public Register would have been developed and the minister would have published it by June 2020. We all obviously also, because we have the national minimum wage now, which was signed into law by the president on the 1st of January 2019, we then need to review the national minimum wage and recommend adjustment for 2020. So that's the work that is being undertaken by the National Minimum Wage Commission. And when they are ready with that, with the outcome of their review, they will share it with everyone. The Performance Indicator 3.1 report on the implementation of bilateral cooperations and multilateral obligations signed off by the minister by 31st March 2020. We have bilateral agreements with a number of countries, and therefore it's important that we implement those bilateral cooperation, and we review them from time to time, and the minister needs to sign off on those. Percentage of collective agreements, we have bargaining councils, and bargaining councils are voluntary institutions that is composed of workers, representatives and employers who came together and decided that they will regulate the working conditions in their specific sector. And all they want is for the minister to extend those agreements to sectors that are non-parties to the agreement. So we want to make sure that 100% of those collective agreements when they meet the required criteria are extended within 90 calendar days by the minister. We also have a registrar of labor relations that registers the trade unions and employer organizations. So we want to make sure that we 100% of the applications that are competent applications, they are approved, or there's an outcome which could be a refusal within 90 days. So we also have a responsibility to report on the impact of amendments on workplace conflicts. Honorable members will remember that we had an Ekurhuleni declaration which led to the amendment of the Labor Relations Act and the Basic Condition of Employment Act and subsequently resulted in the National Minimum Wage. And a number of agreements were signed between the parties, and key to those agreements are the Code of Good Practice, which govern the industrial action, and the issue relating to strikes, how trade unions and employer organizations, trade unions, they need to effect changes in their constitution to reflect the concept of balloting, the concept of balloting. The concept of balloting. I nearly said, Chairperson, my quota of English is coming to an end. to reflect the issue of balloting, and that balloting has to happen before any strike takes place, so that we know that whenever there's a strike, that strike has been, you know, agreed to by the constituencies of the unions. So we report on these things. We issue a number of labor market trends reports, such as the industrial action reports, which looks at strikes and how both employers and workers have behaved during the strikes in terms of the when the agreements were concluded, whether the unions went on strike, you know, when they shouldn't because they were pushed by employers to do so, or you know, we look at the what happens there, because there are instances where workers go on strike. They go to the employer and they say, we demand 9%. The employer says, you're not going to get 9%. So they go on strike, they spend 4 weeks on strike, they come back, they settle at 6%. And we have instances where workers say, we demand 6%. The employer says, we're giving you 2%, they go on strike, they come back, they settle at 7% or 8%. So surely there's something wrong there. There is something wrong there. I mean, when you negotiate, you know there's something called BETNA, your best alternative solution to your negotiated settlement. So you know if you're demanding 10%, you know where you want to settle. Why do you push people to go on strike when you know you're going to settle you'll reach a settlement above what they're offering? So, which means that we need to do some work to make sure that we knock sense into the minds of both employers and workers to resolve issues and use strike as a last resort. So we also do research where we look at the for instance, the impact of the labor market policies that we have on employment, and look at whether we, as the Department of Labor, we have a capacity to deliver on the work that we do, So we do this research and we can share them with the committee members. The next one, Chair, is our budget as a department. In this financial year, we've been allocated 3,435,133,000, and it's allocated to the different branches of the department in this manner. Administration, 961 million. Inspection Enforcement Services, 631 million. Public Employment Services, 611 million. Labor Police and Industrial Relations, 1.2 billion. Now, from this amount, Chairperson and Honorable Members, we have transfers. Because we have entities and we also support some organizations, we need to transfer money from our budget to them. We subsidize the workshops for the blind, subsidize work centers for the disabled, and we also provide funding to Productivity South Africa. We also carry the cost of injuries to public servants, and that cost is included in the budget of the Public Employment Services. So that's why you see a 16.877 million there, Chairperson, so that government is regarded as exempted employers. So they don't have to directly contribute to the compensation fund, but they have to make money available in instances where public servants are injured on duty. So we also have a member state of the International Labour Organization. So we have to pay subscription to the ILO. That's why you see that 25,327,000. We're also a member of the institution called the African Regional Labour Council, which is an institution that is of the English-speaking African countries. It's a capacity-building institution, and South Africa happens to be an executive member of that body, and it trains both government officials, trade unions, and business. So it operates in a tripartite manner, similar to the International Labour Organization. We have a fund called Strengthening Civil Society. This is a fund that we use for a number of initiatives. We have advice centers throughout the country. They don't belong to the Department of Labour, but they exist to provide advice to workers, community members, and we think that they're doing an excellent job, and therefore they should be assisted, and we fund them. We also fund a number of organizations through this Strengthening of Civil Society Fund. CCMA, we of course allocate money, 976 million, so that they're able to deal with issues of disputes resolution. NEDLAC, our social dialogue institution, we also provide funding to them, which is 40 million. So in total, we have just over a billion, which is regarded as transfers. Of course, we pay, we have a budget for household when people leave. And when they retire and all that, we have to put budget aside, and that comes out of the household budget. We have municipal rates that we need to pay, and we have licenses as a result of the ICT equipments that we use, laptops, computers, donation and gifts, and in total, those are the amount to just less than, they don't even amount to a million. So we have in total 1.3 billion, which goes out of that 3.4 billion. So what is left then becomes the operating budget of the department. Of course, from it you need to minus the compensation of employees, because it's more of a sunken cost. People get it, and the operating budget that you use falls under your goods and services, which is what that we use as a department to do the work that we do. Chair, we have an entity that is called Supported Employment Enterprises. This is the entity that does an incredible work, and it provides work to disabled people. So it manufactures linen for the state health institutions. It also manufactures desks for schools and furniture for government departments. This is an institution that would like to appeal to the honorable members to make sure that it's supported, because we want to make sure that people with disability are provided with employment, and we think we can use these factories to achieve that. And we have recently opened a new office, a new factory in Limpopo, and we're hoping that with time we'll open another factory in Mpumalanga, because that's the only province left now that does not have these factories. So we, as a target, we want to, by 2020, make sure that we add 150 into the staff establishment of this entity. But of course, we want this entity to increase its sales revenue. There was a time when this entity, the cost of sales was actually the cost of sales was actually less than the cost of producing the goods and the furniture and the garments. So they were operating at a loss. So what we want them to do is at least to break even. And they are now in their way in to actually achieving that. So we want this. We would like this entity to be supported, and I'm sure that the minister will push for this whenever he has an opportunity to do so. Chair, I'm going to end here. That's the end of our presentation. I don't know if the minister wants to say something. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, DG. Honourable members, now is the opportunity for questions and comments. The minister did just an overview and then the presentation, so we can combine those questions and comments. I can see we've got two hands. I must get your name. Honourable Baker. My apologies for...
No problem. It's a difficult name to remember.
Okay.
Although not as difficult as some of my colleagues. Yeah. But thank you, and thank you, DG.
Can I do this, if you don't mind? All those people, all the honourable members who want to speak, so that I'm able to notice you, people, the honourable member. Mr. Honourable Inanna, then it will be Honourable Kado, it will be Honourable Nonsele, and then Honourable Ngabane will be the last, in that order. Okay? Okay. Then after taking all the questions, then we'll give the department an opportunity to respond on them. All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I want to thank the Minister for being here. And in fact, indeed, yesterday as well. It's a breath of fresh air from very different from your predecessors. So thank you very much. And as a committee, we're deeply honored to have you here. So thank you. I really appreciate it. And hopefully we'll see lots of you. You're a good-looking man, so please come back. Thank you very much. DG, thank you for this report. First and foremost, and every year I start off by saying, you set the targets, the department sets the targets, and then lo and behold, you normally hit them. I had suggested in years gone by, and I'm suggesting it again, that we get an external agency to set some targets for you instead of you hitting the target. If I had to set the target as to how far I should run, I'd run as far as the bathroom, and I'd probably hit that target every year. So I'm not that impressed, but let me go into it. In slide 5, and I'll try and see if I can squint my eyes to have a look at it. In slide 5, you try to skip over that, but again we see your policy mandate of the Department of Labor, and it's the same old trope, the creation of decent work. Now I understand that in terms of the ILO, the term decent work is reflected often. However, we have about 10 million unemployed in South Africa. They might feel that if you created work as opposed to decent work, that might feel a little bit more accepted in our workplace when they don't have. Minister, also in the introduction of values at slide 7, we treat employees with care, dignity and respect. I get about 30 queries a day from people who have been treated ill at the UIF and workmen's compensation. They wouldn't agree that you've anywhere met any of those targets. I can produce most of those figures for you if you so wish. I do, in fact, on about 3 or 4 a day, do go back to UIF and workmen's compensation, and your commissioners, bless them, are actually quite good in the sense that they get back to me. But the majority of the people who are complaining would never agree that you treat employees with care, dignity and respect. I think you're referring to employees in the marketplace as opposed to your employees. I do presume you would treat your own employees very well. It's the employees of the public that I'm particularly worried about. If I may carry on to slide number 11. Again, your outcome where you refer to decent employment and inclusive economic growth. Now, I'm not really sure what you mean by that outcome. I presume that you are trying to put money in the pocket of the employees, which means that they have to be employed in the first place. And again, decent employment is not going to get you that. The skilled and capable workforce at outcome number 5, I think we need to spend a lot more time working with the Department of Education and, in fact, with the CETAs, who are wholly inadequate. They've failed dismally, and maybe the Minister will look into the desperate state of our CETAs. I think most of them are just on their knees, if they exist at all. If I may carry on to the next area, and I have flagged it, so bear with me as I turn the page. We have a look at slide 19, where you were talking about irregular expenditure and wasteful expenditure, etc. Every year for the past 5 years, the Minister will be pleased to know that we have failed the audit report every year in just about every single department within the Department of Labor. And every year this irregular expenditure, fruitful and wasteful expenditure, actually increases. And so I'd be interested to know what in fact you're going to do about that and whether we're going to decrease it a little bit, even a little bit, as opposed to an increase this year. But we wait with bated breath as to what the AG says. But you would know that every year, and it's not under your watch, DG, but before you arrived, at the department fell apart with regard to the AG. If I could move on to slide number 20.
Sorry, Honourable Member, can I suggest this? That obviously we will have the next round. Would it not be wise that you keep the rest for the next round?
So I'm happy. I've got another 15 or so questions, but I'm happy to. Thank you.
Okay. No, Honourable Members, I think that the 15 left questions are just an understatement. Can we try to, so that we are able to get the response that we are going to be happy for. So if 3 questions for all the members that for this round, then we will then get so that we don't have too many questions. The next, Honourable Yinana.
Mama, thank you very much, Honourable Member, and I appreciate it for the presentation. On my first two questions, one that I'm going to ask on page 14 about the services that are being provided by the two SOM centers. That out of 139, 72 are providing that service. What happens to the remaining one, which is 60? The challenge, Chairperson, with the two SOM center, especially on weekends and the time that is being allocated when they are opening, most of those two centers, they are providing the service to the people, especially to the young ones with the skills and the program. But the working hours are not providing the sufficient training and services, because we'll find them, they are opened up until 5 or 6. And the rest of the people who are coming from looking for the employment, when they are back, the two SOM centers are closed. Wouldn't it be possible that the department looks at the extending hours, in particular over the weekend, because only Saturday and Sunday that people can access those two SOM centers, and the accessibility therefore is questionable. The second one, Chairperson, is on slide 44. I'm looking at disabled people. I just want to find out from the department that in your organogram, Minister, how many disabled people are employed in the department and their salary band? Because it's one thing to say that we are employing the disabled person in your department, only to find that he doesn't go up to the echelons of the department. Hence, I'm asking the salary band, do you have the target for saying up until when that you are going to achieve that target? The last chairperson, on slide 48, when the stakeholders are registering for application as a trade union or as a white, is there a threshold of saying that you can only, if you have this membership, that you can apply to be a stakeholder or to be a trade union? And who determines the boundaries? Because you'll find out, because people want to achieve a boundary, they will put together different sectors that might not be related, as it is the case even now, that different sectors are becoming under one registered trade union, and it becomes a conflict amongst themselves. Who determines the boundaries, and what is the threshold in order for those people to register as a trade union? Thank you, Professor. Others are going to follow in the next round. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Honourable Kado.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Minister and DG, for the presentation. Minister, it seems to me that the rebranding of the Department of Labour to the Department of Employment and Labour is going to require a reconceptualization of your core work from focusing on those who are already in work and all the legislative and regulatory compliance that entails to getting the unemployed into work. And I wanted to know from you, at a high level, what does the new employment part of your department's name mean for the department? How are the department and its programs going to be restructured to give effect to this new focus on job creation? And what effect will that restructuring have on budget realignment? And then secondly, just a much smaller question. Going to your budget breakdown, I see that over 1.2 billion is budgeted for Program 4 Labour Policy and Industrial Relations. And then if you move on to the next slide, the total of transfers from Program 4 to the likes of the ILO, NEDLAC, CCMA, etc., those all amount to 1.3 billion as far as I can tell. I just wanted to understand the discrepancy in those two figures. Maybe it's a very simple explanation. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honourable Nonsal.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Chair. My comments are first and foremost in appreciation of the input that has been made by the Honourable Minister, particularly with regard to the reconfiguration of the department, meaning that we're still expecting the department to come back to talk on the critical issues regarding the APPs and the strategic plan in line with the SONA mandate. So either way, Chair, mine is going to be also be taking that into account. The first question, in fact, the area of concern is with regard to the area of inspections and enforcement, because I've noted that with regard to the targets that we're sitting at 60%, and it's the most critical area that affects mostly our communities, particularly the vulnerable sectors of workers, those who are largely ununionized or where there currently could be problems even with their unions, and perhaps whether, for instance, there can be a more elaborated plan to deal with the, to ensure that we, in fact, as we improve on the 60%, because itself is, in fact, an improvement, but there is quite a large degree of areas that need attendance. I think that's the first area that perhaps would need to raise. The second area is with regard to the period of the finalization of investigation. One takes note of what DG has said with regard to the timelines and so on, and whether perhaps can we mitigate the timeline so that at least we have these investigations tied up quite much sooner where possible. Lastly is with regard to the SEEs, the supported employment enterprises, is whether, for instance, with regard to the next report, can we have just a schedule at the back, as part of the report, just a schedule that would say the enterprise where it's located, including the critical areas that members may have spoken about, like how many, including the targets within the institution itself, or with regard to disability employment figures. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Honourable Nkapan.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. One is going to start by appreciating the report that has been tabled before us by the DG. Chair, I've got three issues here. The first one is on slide 19, under financial management. Yes, it's 18, financial management. One wants to appreciate the fact that the department is adhering to the PFMA, and we can see that the report is comprehensive. It is indicating the cases where there were irregular expenditures, the fruitless, the wasteful, unauthorized, and that the action has been taken. That's the first issue that we need to commend the department for. The second issue, Chairperson, is on our outcome 12, page 13. What I want to check from the department, Chair, is that the outcome 12, I believe it is derived from the white paper on the transformation of public service delivery of 1997 on strengthening the institutional capacity as well as the NDP that has been developed by this government of the African National Congress. So, Chair, what I want to check is that how the department synergizes this particular function in ensuring that we transform the public service. Hence, this function is more championed by the DPSA. The last one, Chair, is on slide 37. The DG has indicated that the department relies on the NPA to ensure that the cases or the incidents investigated and finalized. So what I want to check is that how do they deal with the issue whereby maybe the NPA is taking longer to finalize those incidents, looking at the targets that the department has actually set for themselves in ensuring that at the end of the day, they do meet this 70% target quarterly. Because, like, if there are delays, that would mean there is a possibility that the department is not going to meet this set target of meeting or achieving 70% per quarter. Kiyabulela.
No, thank you very much. Just for now, just two questions from my side, DJ. Page 17, I'm going to go on page 17, which also talks about the systems in the department. You are saying all cases which are detected are reported monthly. Then to me, somebody who's coming outside from that department, is that means your systems are sharp and accurate. How have you managed to do that? I'm raising this because it has been a struggle, should I say that? It has been a struggle in some of the departments, and if I can just make an example, even in municipalities, we have a challenge of. So if your systems are so sharp, how because we would. I think it will be important that you become a, what is the better word for English, I'm going to think about it, a benchmark. I'm raising this because we don't want to come back, we don't want, when we conduct our oversight, we are confronted with a monster, which we would have been, whereas the documents are in this, are saying something different. In terms of trade unions formation, how confident are you as the department, the minister and teacher, that you don't have fly-by-night trade unions? Because we will also have to check if then that is not happening. Now I've lost that slide which talks about the last one, your budget. I'm worried. I'm going to, if somebody can just message it. In terms of monies allocated to enforcement, inspection and enforcement, which is slide number? Slide number 52. I just want to reflect on what my concern is there, and if I can just be explained. Inspection and enforcement services are given. Budget is 631 million. Labour policy and industrial, it's 1. Is it? Billion or million? Billion. Can I be explained? Because my understanding is that is the critical inspection and enforcement services are the cornerstone, and I must be told, Minister, if my thinking is skewed, are the cornerstone of the Department of Labour, with that there is going, there's the employment side now. So why such a, I think we'll, if can, I can just be explain why that difference for me. I think those are the last questions. The others are going to come in the second round. If you think that you can respond to them now, it's fine. Before we just skip it. Okay, I'll hand over to, and oh, the other thing is, whoever is to respond, feel free to delegate. It's not within, can't prescribe who must respond or not respond. It's your call. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Let me start with the last question. The budget allocated to labor policy and industrial relations is 1.2 billion. For the simple reason that this is a branch that is responsible, one, for the ensuring that there's labor peace, and secondly, they're responsible for the monitoring of the workplace conflict, and thirdly, they are responsible for the development of these labor market policies that we have. Now, how do they do that? You have the Commission for Conciliation, Mediation and Arbitration that falls under this branch that gets its funding from the branch. So, Honorable Chairperson and the members, you would see from the transfers that we've made that CCMA actually got the lion's share of that budget, which is very close to a billion. It's 976 million. So from that 1.2 billion, 976 goes to the CCMA. So in actual fact, the allocation to labor market policy and industrial relations is far less. They carry that budget because of the linkages between the branch and the entities that have to carry out a number of these functions that I have outlined, including NEDLAC. So the budget from NEDLAC comes from the budget which is allocated to the branch. So that's why you see that they have 1.2 billion versus the allocation to Inspection Enforcement Services, which is 631 million. How confident are we with regards to whether we don't have fly-by-night trade unions? The Office of the Registrar is responsible for ensuring that we don't have the fly-by-night trade unions. That's why some of these so-called trade unions, when they apply to the registrar and their applications are turned down, they go to court. Because the registrar turns them down on the basis that, on the basis of the investigation that they've done that would reflect that they are not a trade union. You'll find that it's a one-man's or one-lady's show, or it's a couple. You know, and husband and wife, they want to start their own trade union. And they do these things, people do these things, Honorable Chairperson, because they want to get access to the CCMA. They want to be able to go and represent people at the CCMA. So what they will do, they will take, desperate workers who have genuine problems that are supposed to be referred to the CCMA, they would then charge them money and then go and represent them at the CCMA. So they're not really trade unions. So we're able to sift them out by the office, using the office of the registrar. And with regards to the investigation, the systems that we have to detect wasteful expenditure, we report, bulk of our work is done at provinces. We have 9 provincial offices, and we have 126 labor centers. So in each and every office, we have a section responsible for finance, and of course the supply chain offices. So on a monthly basis, the supply chain office and the finance office is required to report to head office with regards to the transactions that they that happened during the course of the month. And we're then able to pick up some of those transactions that were not done in accordance with the laws. So in most instances, they relate to contracts. So you'll find that there are contracts that have lapsed, but the province will not indicate that the contract has lapsed. So they will then continue to pay the service provider on a month-to-month basis up until the contract has been extended. So we're able to pick up that the contracts are supposed to have expired on a certain month, and our supply chain management, which has dedicated people that are focusing on contract management, would then talk to the province. So on a monthly basis, leading to a quarterly basis, we're able to pick up this. And by the way, there's a requirement that irregular expenditure and wasteful expenditure must be reported by any official. Any instance of that happening has to be reported, and if it's not reported, it's a misconduct. On the slide regarding the investigation and finalization of incidents, what do we do in instances where NPA delays finalizing cases? This is a very frustrating experience that we have with the NPA. The department does its own investigation and submit the report to the NPA. The NPA then, they have to start their own process. And often that process requires that they refer the docket to the police, for the police to start their own investigation. Remember, we do the investigation in terms of the Occupational Health and Safety Act. From that report, they need to find criminal act, and that requires them to go and follow their own investigation. But we have, over the years, worked closely with them in terms of training them with regards to the requirements of our own act, and how they can help us to speed up the investigations. And I must say that in instances where we have prosecutors who are very familiar with the Occupational Health and Safety Act, they act immediately, and we get far more better outcomes. And there was a time when in Gauteng, for instance, there was a court dedicated to occupational health and safety cases, and we had far more better response from NPA and from the courts. So it's a very daunting task, but we try and work with the NPA to make sure that cases are finalized. We also instances where there are serious delays, we interact with the if cases are referred to court, but we don't have dates. We interact with the courts, with the office of the Chief Justice, if the matter goes to or delays quite a lot. In fact, if it goes to the Labour Court, we also speak to the President of the Labour Court. So we have that relationship, that open relationship and working together that we have established. On outcomes 12, or how do we synergize the outcomes 12 with the transformation of the public service? The DPSA is a department that is responsible for the setting policies for the recruitment and standards that must be applied or must be observed when we recruit staff in the public service. So as a department, we have a recruitment and selection policy that complies with the public service regulations in terms of the professionalization of the service and professionalization of our staff in taking into account the functions that we perform as a department. But of course, we have employment equity, imperatives in terms of transforming our own department. So we are informed by our employment equity policy as a Department of Labor, and each position that we have has its own inherent requirements. So we adhere to those inherent requirements that are in our policies. We will provide the schedule of the location of the SEE centers and employment figures. I'm sure Mr. Mrotoba would have those figures. He can give us the numbers in terms of how many people we employ in these centers. Can't we mitigate the delays in the investigation? We try our level best. In fact, we have different categories of these incidences. We have what we call a Section 31 investigation, which is much more easier, and it doesn't take that much time to finalize. The biggest delays are with what we refer to as a Section 32 in Occupational Health and Safety inquiry, where you require, it's a public inquiry. You have, you have lawyers, you have technical experts that are there, so it's a very rigorous process that resembled a court process, but it's for the purposes of an appointed presiding inspector to be able to conclude his or her report on the occurrence of such an incident. And of course, when we finalize that, after having gone through that process, we still have to refer the report to the NPA. So that's the challenge that we're sitting with here. The inspection targets, we improving on the 60%. We, as I've explained earlier on, we strive to make sure that all the cases that we have are resolved, are finalized timeously. But we want honorable members to understand the fact that we have to go through courts. And that's why we have these targets. And also, we try our level best to make sure that our targets are informed by the resources that we have. So it doesn't, it will not help us to come to the committee and say we'll do 100% of this, knowing very well that we will not be able to do it. I think we will not be true to ourselves and also will be misleading the committee. The reconfiguration of the department to the Department of Employment and Labor, of course, the honorable member has indicated that we will come back to the committee once that has been done, and I think the minister would reflect on that when the time is right for the minister to do so. There was a question on the discrepancies on the transfers. The honorable member spoke very fast. I didn't catch it. What he wanted to ask. Honorable Chair, if you may please repeat that question.
Thanks, Jess. So my confusion stemmed from the discrepancy between the overall budget for Program 4, which is 1.309 billion, and then the amount of transfers that flowed out of Program 4 which amounted to slightly more than that, I think. I don't have the particular slide in front of me at the moment. Yeah, that sounds about right. Yes, okay, so it was 1.23 budgeted for Program 4, and then the transfers amounted to 1.309, so slightly more.
Okay, those transfers, they include transfers that, if you look at the households, 383, if you look at provinces and municipalities, is 656, donation and gifts, 53, which adds up to 1092, and if you add all of that, so it's not only it's not only program 4 that we added here. So program 4, and then we added other transfers that we make to add to the 1.309. I think that's the explanation. Okay, and the next one is the application to register as a trade union, who determines the boundaries. The registrar does that. So we have a registrar who does that in terms of the Labor Relations Act. And as I've indicated to the question raised by the chairperson, one of the criteria that he uses is to check on the bona fide of that applicant. If that applicant, for instance, to start a trade union, you need to demonstrate that firstly we have members. So you can't start a trade union if it's just you and your wife or someone, it's you and yourself. You need to make sure that you have members, you have an office, and there's proof that you will have subscriptions. So you need to have a bank account. So those things, and we find that in some instances, the applicants don't even have the bank account. In fact, they use offices of their business. They're running a business, and they use offices of their business. In some instances, they use it's lawyers who use their own offices to run a trade union, so we're able to pick these things up. So there's a well set criteria that the registrar is using to make sure that these are sifted through. We don't have these bogus. I think Mr. Mrotowa will be able to give a sense of how much we're paying these disabled people that work in the supported employment factories, but also as a department. In terms of the government mandate, we have a target. I think it's about 2.9 of the staff complement should actually be disabled people. And I don't know offhand at their levels now, but that's information that we can make available to the committee members. The Tucson centers, we would love to, to make sure that the we serve our people for as long as they are there. In fact, we have a campaign in the department called Taking Services to the People, where we spend almost the whole day, 2 days in fact, in a specific area, and we target those areas where we seldom visit those places because they are in a far-flung areas. So we spend the whole day there, and we get people served. If you have a UIF complaint, get resolved immediately. And we do it with the support of other government departments, private sector, bank. The banks will be there because as a UIF beneficiary, you are required to have a bank account. So they'll be there to, in instances where you don't have a bank account, they will be there, Capitex, to open the bank and get the money transferred to your bank account immediately. So that's the kind of a service that we have, besides using the Tusong centers. And there are complications in terms of using some of these Tusong centers. There is no infrastructure in some of the Tusong centers. And if we put our infrastructure there as a department, there is no guarantee that this, our infrastructure will be safe there. And that's why we use this 62 that we're using, because it's safe for us to use those Tusong centers. But beyond that, I indicated we have buses that we use to extend our access to areas where we don't have that people don't have access to our services. The issue of irregular and wasteful expenditure that continues to increase, I think what the committee will notice is that the irregular and wasteful expenditure has been coming down in terms of values. But instances of irregular expenditure have been increasing. But the values have been coming down because the amounts of, when I talk about values, I'm talking about the amount of money that, that constitute an irregular expenditure. But there are minor instances where you'll have, and mainly these are, they relate to the fact that we, as a Department of Labor, we own cars. We have a fleet of cars, and we must pay settle third-party claims, and that becomes an irregular expenditure because we're not insured. Government is not insured. We're self-insured because of the number of cars that we own as a department. So mainly these are, they come from there as a result of that, and you cannot predict an accident that an inspector will be driving a car and they will then be involved in an accident. So we have to pay third-party liability. So these are some of the cases that occurrences that have caused that have increased, but the values have actually gone down. The comment that we need to spend a bit of time working with sitters, I think the minister in his opening remarks did make mention of this, that in fact we do have an MOU with the Department of Higher Education, and we are working with the sitters as we speak in training the unemployment insurance fund beneficiaries and the unemployed people. We use them to assist us, and of course they have a relationship with companies, so we're able to place a number of these young people that have been trained in employment. So we are working with them. We accept the fact that it's not all well and good. We could, both the sitters and ourselves, would actually do far more better to deal with the issue of skills development. But the minister has spoken about the need to tighten that relationship with the Department of Higher Education. Well, the notion that we don't treat employees fairly, especially those that are coming to the department to claim UIF, I think judging by the complaints that you get and the complaints that other people get, it's true that you have people that are not happy, and maybe what we have picked up, in fact, Honorable Chairperson, is that you will have a number of people who do not want to go and stand in queues. So they will go to the Honorable Bagrem because they know that Honorable Bagrem will call the DG or will call the Commissioner, will call the UI, the Compensation Fund Commissioner, or will call the Minister. So once that complaint is reached by either the Minister, Officers Minister, Deputy Minister, myself, it is given a priority. So it becomes a DG, ministerial, a deputy minister inquiry, and it's given a priority, and it's resolved. Now, it's fair that it's resolved, but it's unfair to an extent that there are people that go to the labor center and they have to go through the entire process to get their claims and their cases resolved. So it's sometimes it's not as a reflection of the bad service that we offer as a department, but it's a reflection of the routes that other people choose to take to get their complaints resolved faster and without having to sit down and in the queues. But we do take the fact that there are those that go to our offices and they don't get a better service, and we strive to improve that service. And that's why the UIF has improved its turnaround time in terms of the processing of the maternity benefits, the ordinary benefits, and other benefits that they offer. The concept of a decent work, Chairperson, I often hear people expressing the sentiments that Honorable Bagrem expresses, that when you talk about decent work, you talk about a costly exercise. If you employ someone and you undertake to pay that person in line with the national minimum wage, you have to treat that person as a human being, meaning that if that person requires to work, or her work will require a personal protective equipment or clothing, because of the nature of the work, we have to provide that. But you also need to create an environment where people are able to have a voice, and I don't think that's costly. It's a simple thing that you provide a job, and that person earns as per the prescribed minimum wages, which is prescribed for that sector, if it's in line with the collective, with the bargaining council agreements. But you also provide the necessary environment that the people are able to work in an environment where it's free, they can associate with whoever they want to associate with, they have a voice. And that's what decent work is all about. It has nothing to do with paying people exorbitant amounts of money, but it's to make sure that we treat people decently and we respect them. I think that's what decent work is all about. Well, when we set our targets, we always try and be as honest as possible using the resources that we have. We have, for instance, 1,800 inspectors. So we can't come here and claim that we will conduct 1.7 million inspections, which is the total number of employers registered on the unemployment insurance database. It's going to be impossible. So we need to set a target that is based on, or that takes the reality that we have limited resources, but we need to make sure that we are as reasonable as possible when we set the target, and that's what we've tried to do. And achieving the target is what we have to strive for. We can't set a target that we can't achieve. We will not be doing what we're supposed to be doing. And I think I've responded to a number of all these questions, Chairperson. I don't know if the minister wants to add something.
Okay, thanks, Honorable Chairperson. In terms of people with disabilities, I think there are a number of levels. I think the DG alluded to the 3% that we set in the department, and that cuts across a number of professions which the DDG Corporate Services can give the statistics. Over and above that, there are also other two levels that the department is very active in. In the factories, we employ people that are in line with the United Nations Convention, which requires governments to provide special supported employment for people with mental disabilities. That makes it very difficult for them to compete in the normal mainstream labor market.
Now, in those factories, currently we have just above 1,100 people. Their salaries range between 4,500 to 6,500, depending on years of service, and we recruit them from the various special schools. Ordinarily, honorable members, these people should be at home drawing social grant, which is a third or a quarter of what they are earning at SEE, and that is why most of them will choose to get employment rather than to stay at home and earn the social grant, because it is much less. And they are outside of the social grant network. But we do have another category of people that are employed in NGOs that are outside of the department. They get a subsidy from the social grant. They get an income from the factories wherein they work. And as the department, we give those people 800 rand as part of their subsidy. And we also give the employer that employs them an administration fee. And in that scheme that the DG alluded to, we currently have just above 650 people, which we are planning to increase to about 1,000 next year, given the success of the scheme and the additional allocation that the National Treasury gave to us. And like the DG said, we'll make available all the information with regard to where we are located. Like in Cape Town, there are factories that we invite members of Parliament, when you have time, to come and visit those factories. We'll give you the exact location anytime you are free to come. We supply the Groote Schuur Hospital that you see in the Western Cape. The linen that is worn by patients there comes from these factories. Thank you.
Sorry, Minister, Honourable Minister, the DG Corporation.
Yes, the question on the spread of the people with disabilities within the department. We've got a total of 237 within the department, with an establishment of 8,000. They are spread this way. We've got two on levels 13 and 14, which is senior management. And then we've got 21 on level 10 and 12. Between 10 and 12, and then 173 within management, middle management, supervisory level, which is 6 to 10, and then we've got 41 on entry level, level 3 to 5. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Minister.
Just two comments, a short one on the issue of the decent work. This is part of the international convention, which we have signed as a country under the ILO. When we've been talking about all those rights, social, economic, and so on and so on. So we are obliged. But simplified, it talks about those issues of child labor, which we must avoid, the issues of the social protection for the workers. It talks about all those laws, the national and the health and protection of the workers. Hence, the health and safety is such a very crucial issue in our country. The child and maternity benefits, these are the very basic benefits which we're talking about. But also the very UIF we're talking about, it's very crucial, because during the bad times for the employees, you must be able to help them in terms of training for a particular short period. That forms part of a decent work which we're talking about. There's something very interesting which I want to raised by Comrade Gardo. It's my comrade here. Yeah. In fact, that's the issue which we have to deal with, Chairperson. What does re-employment mean? Which has been added now. We are no more DOL. We are now Department of Employment and Labour, which is, means we are DEL. The existing Labour Department includes some of the following characteristics. There's a major footprint across the country through the provincial offices, which the DG was talking about, and the labour centres, which are providing the public employment services, bringing the job seekers and employers together. That's what they are supposed to be doing. Supported employment for people with disabilities, with the skills development, inspection and enforcement. At the level of the policy, draft employment and migration policies in line with the ILO guidelines. This is an explosive one, but we have to confront it. The president of Nigeria 3 weeks back pronounces that no job in any sector should be given to a foreign national if the Nigerians can do it. And we're told that in Zimbabwe is the same thing, but the DG who have long been in the department, they might have done a research. That's what is happening in different countries. In Durban, the banning of the trucks, somebody said the drivers are mad. But the drivers were able, when we're trying to mediate it, to tell us that the issue is there are companies who have exploited the situation of the Zimbabweans and Mozambicans. And, Chairperson, some have employed 100% foreign drivers, claiming that South Africans do not have the skills, technical skills of these high-tech trucks. The other one was a stereotype that South Africans are lazy. But if you look into what is happening in some of the farms, more foreigners. If you look at what is happening in the hospitality industry, restaurants and hotels. If you look what is happening in the security, very dangerous for the security of the country to have security guards who are armed. You employ mainly foreigners. If you look into, now this thing has been extended to Chairperson, it has been extended to the retail sector. If you go to the spa, but what motivates this? It's greed. What motivates this is to exploit the vulnerable workers who are coming from outside, knowing that they will take anything, even if you say they must work for 12 hours. And somebody was saying, here is a Zimbabwean or a Mozambican driver employed by this company and is told that at 12 midnight you must be in Beitbridge from Durban. He gets out of the depot. Around the corner, he picks up 3 other drivers and is going to pay them out of his pocket because he knows that he can't be able to make it. So he's doing the work of 3 or 4 drivers. Then he moves. But, colleagues, and we must understand the seriousness of this thing, of the trucks. And I'm sorry, Chairperson, that I keep on branching. You see, when there's a strike there, it means that the whole harbour, goods and services are not moving. Trade is not moving. There's nothing coming in to be shipped out. There's nothing coming in to be taken from and then taken inland. It's a very serious matter. But it is as a result of our sometimes exploitation, because there was a decision by the Home Affairs to give what they called ZEP, Zimbabwe Employment Permits. And according to the according to the UN declarations, refugees or asylum seekers, once they are given that permit, they qualify for everything. What did they do? Employers just went to take those people and left the South African. And imagine doing that when there's such massive unemployment in the country. It's a recipe for disaster. But I'm trying to answer your question. Let me quickly say something, Chairperson. The entities, the three entities, when we're talking about this creation of the employment, we have to be creative now. The EIF, the Compensation Fund, including the CCMA in promoting sound labor relations, because it would be wrong to focus more on unemployment and you forgot about the labor relations side of it, maintaining sound labor relations, because there are massive retrenchments there. You have to deal with those massive retrenchments and so on. You must not just make them easy. People quickly deal with retrenching the people. Productivity, South Africa. So all these institutions are going to be very key in upping the game. And the mandate or the name Department of Labor has encouraged the notion that the mandate is just to promote bargaining and enforce labor standards, which is indeed important, but it's not the only thing now. We must go beyond that. But in fact, elements of labor market regulation and employment enhancement have been there. The focus now is to tease, as you say, these elements out and upscale where possible. But this process requires, Chairperson and members, a review of the current processes and the practices and resources of the existing Department of Labor, together with an analysis of the areas of cooperation and coordination with other departments or other state departments who have the same objectives. How do you leverage the existing resources and tools to enhance employment creation? How do you strengthen the labor market to ensure accessibility and reduced bureaucracy? That is killing us. We must remove the red tapes to assist the employers, especially when it comes to the SMMEs. Ensure provision of the appropriate training to address this skill shortage. That's why we must even up the game when it comes to the CETAs. But provide that enabling environment, labor services to match the demand and the supply of the skills. And it's common cause, Chairperson, that South Africa has a major challenge of structural unemployment, which points to a number of timelines. Short-term measures to mitigate unemployment, e.g. the EPWP, CWP, as well as maybe some low-hanging fruit in the department. But I think the question we must deal with, and be honest, Chairperson, as a former labor leader yourself, EPWP, a number of those people who are doing it have appreciated it. So is CPWP. But the organized unions are saying those people must be made permanent. You do that, it means you must just cut down all the numbers. From that 4 million, you might end up with only 50,000. So these are the debates which we must have. Whether is it going to be, or should we just ban those programs? I don't think so. But I'm saying these are short terms. We agree that they are short terms. But there will also be longer term measures which relate to the macroeconomic policy and education. The big debate when you're talking about structural unemployment, you're talking about the skills. What are we emphasizing? Here is an embarrassment, Chairperson. Every time, that's me now in Midrand, where I stay, Noordwijk, an old Boere suburb. If you go there, you're calling for a plumber or an electrician. It's either you're going to get an old white male, 55 years old. If he's black, he's going to be a Mozambican or a Zimbabwean. Is our education talking to the skills, which we need? So these are very crucial issues. So when it comes to those skills, and these guys are self-employed, And you know, there's something which of course, you need to talk about the need for planning for the fourth industrial revolution and start dealing with those. But here is an issue which I thought I need to mention. In almost all the countries, there's a debate which people are talking about the future of work. It's not what you would call formal employment in many countries now. Yes, you have to protect the formal employment, but it's through the SMEs, what you call the informal economy. What are we going to be doing there as a country, not just as this department? That thinking needs to come in into the whole thing. And therefore the billions which are in the PIC, the billions or millions which are in the compensation fund, the skills development, we will have to come up with very, very, very serious programs to be able to fund quality programs. Not a fly-by-night program, as you are talking about fly-by-night unions. They are fly-by-night programs where people are making money, good money for that matter. But when you look at the impact of that particular program, it becomes a joke. Therefore, at the end of it, Honorable Kando, through the chairperson, that cooperation and alignment of the departments for the employment creation and skills development is going to be very key. And I think the Department of Education, of Higher Education, we've already had a chat with Minister Nzimande. We want to set up a joint team to tease these issues. How are we going to upscale? We all know the history of moving these things from labor to higher education. But these sitters, when visited as major players in linking labor market skills requirements to skills providers, that was the intention. The TVET, the universities, and even the private community colleges, they remain very important, especially in the rural areas. And we are saying, people, abasebenza umhlaba, agriculture. But where are the agricultural colleges? Where are they? We finished them. With due respect, I suspect that the Nationalist Party was very clear when they introduced this, what you call agricultural colleges and so on. But the anchor was vocational education. And I think that's what we're trying to address here, let alone calling different names and so on. Because you can have a name change, but it means that, but if we don't emphasize vocational education, we're still going to struggle when it comes to employment.
Can we...
Chairperson, can it be single?
Well, I don't want to go into other things, because I don't want to run a risk of being accused of nepotism. But the thing of clans and in laws, Honorable Kado, you'll understand elsewhere. So that's why he slipped and said sissy. You'll understand why he's joking. I don't know, honourable members, whether there are any questions. I see the hand, honourable Zuma. Is there any other? Any by the looks, it's only that one. I'll allow honourable Zuma to ask the question.
Thanks, Chairperson. I also welcome the presentation of the DG. But mine, I've just seen to this straight plan document outside this. I've seen this, our own people is working in a farm. So mine, I just want to get the clarity from the DG that is there any policy or provision regarding the issue of eviction because there are people who are staying in a farm more than 20 years, and later on, only to find out that one of their family members died, and when he dies, the owner of the farm will evict the family and is not going to allow the family to bury their loved ones. So I only need to get the clarity that which role is played by the Department of Labor in that situation. I thank you.
I just want to know that there's something that is in terms of the strikes, which has always been bothering my mind. Two things. I think Honorable Inanna raised this thing, if I understand the context, within the context of poaching. Because there are those unions that are poaching. Maybe as we move forward and within as the department in this new political environment, Volendoka allied, but also general takes everybody. There's a term that says, and you interpret to others, ugalele bayin. That is why we have got now a union that is in the mining sector, a union that has went into the public service. That's one. Two, what role do you play, or do you have a role as the Department of Labor, when a particular sector, a particular union in a particular sector will take union members, workers, to a strike which lasts for more than 5 months? Because it does not need anybody to be an economist or being a rocket scientist. If workers are taken on a strike for more than a month in particular, make an example, or two, they find it difficult to recover. And they will never recover. They lose properties, their children are taken, and they are unable to pay fees. What then becomes the role of the last one? I hope the registrar inspection is also conducted into all departments in the Republic of South Africa. Not only the employers, because not only factories, yeah. Not only factories. I hope you are inspecting Parliament. Yeah. Because we are to lead by example as government in particular. So this is just a comment that I hope the inspection is being conducted right across. For instance, I know what is then going to be your relationship, because in health there is what is called the Office of Health Standard Compliance, which then also that conduct inspections in the health sector. What then becomes your relationship with them? So I just wanted to ask those questions, and then after that we'll wrap up and close. Tichi?
Chairperson, I'm going to ask Mr. Seafield and the Inspector General to take the two questions. Otherwise, they would not be able to justify the expenses that we incurred for bringing them here. So they want to respond to the last two questions. I want to respond to the question that talks to the evictions and what is our role as a department. There's an act called Extension of Tenure Act, which is the responsibility of the Department of Rural Development. So they have a sole responsibility here. However, our responsibility in the farming sector is only limited to two things. One, making sure that people are paid in accordance with the national minimum wage. Secondly, occupational health and safety issues. And thirdly, that if there are deductions that are made relating to payment to payment towards electricity and the accommodation. Those accommodations meet the required standard that are prescribed in the basic conditions of employment. Those are the three things, and of course, get the issue of child labour, we get involved in that. But in terms of the evictions, is the sole responsibility of the Department of Rural Development.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Minister. The question relates to strikes and the long duration of strikes. Chair, you would recall that the DG spoke about our involvement in moderating workplace conflict and the amendments that have been effected in terms of the labour relations act. There are two areas or three areas that I want to raise. One is the requirement for a ballot before a strike that has been in the legislation, but has just been pronounced in the latest amendments that there's a requirement for unions to go out on ballot in terms of the before they go out on strike. This has been in the Labour Relations Act, and one of the things that we've requested the registrar, and we've empowered the registrar of labour relations, is to ensure that the provision of a secret ballot or a ballot, if you will, is in the constitutions of unions, so that before unions go out on strike, there is a requirement for a ballot to be had. Now, this has been in the legislation. It's just that we've empowered the registrar in terms of the amendments so that a union does not go out on strike willy-nilly. There is a requirement that the union leadership consult with the members of that union in terms of its intention to go out on strike. So that's the first area of intervention that we've had in terms of moderating workplace conflict. The second area of intervention that we have is the ability of the CCMA to intervene when a strike has an effect on the economy of the country, on the lives and livelihoods of people, so that if a strike goes out and its impact on the economy is, for example, in the trucking industry, is evident, the CCMA has a right to go out now and offer services in terms of dispute resolution to see whether they can resolve this dispute without it being prolonged unduly. So that's the second area of intervention that we... So the mechanisms in the law are there in order to address these issues. The third area that we have is the notion of voluntary arbitration that we have. So when the Minister of Labour sees that the strike goes on unduly, he has a right in terms of the law to appoint an arbitration panel through the CCMA. The arbitration panel is constituted of members that are nominated by business, members that are nominated by labour to have voluntary arbitration. Now it does not suspend the strike, but what it does, it provides an ability for the union and the employers, but also of community to note that if everything is taken into consideration, this would be the settlement that would be able to reach, given everything that we have, with the assistance of the arbitration panel that is constituted of business and labour, in terms of the nomination process that I've outlined. And that provides a basis for the economy to see this is the sort of settlement that could be reached within the sector. If the union does not accept that settlement rate, then the union must indicate in terms of the voluntary arbitration. Again, I want to point out this is voluntary arbitration. It does not, but it provides an opportunity for the economy to see this is what should be reached within that sector, and therefore it is a mechanism to minimize and limit the strike action that we have. So there are mechanisms in law, both in terms of the current or of the existing legislation, but also in relationship to the amendment that we put in terms of law. The fourth area that I'd want to raise is the issue of the code of good practice on collective bargaining, picketing and industrial action that have been signed by organized business, organized labor, and community at NEDLAC, in terms of the ability of the unions and organizations to actually operate within a singular time frame that modus of operandi, if I may call it that way, in terms of the code of good practice that is set. So the steps that we put in terms of the Labor Relations Act and the amendments that we built into that provides for us to be able to intervene. In the past, the minister would have had the agreement of the parties to the industrial action before the minister could intervene in that industrial action. The amendments, what we have currently now, is that the minister can intervene irrespective of whether there's agreement or not. So there's that ability that is built within the legislation to deal with the issues that we have. Chair, I think it answers the question in relationship to the tools that we have in terms of limiting industrial action.
This is quite interesting because we have got an ex-union that has taken its workers for more than 5 months, which now this question that, is there any time frame, and pardon me, DG, is there any time frame for intervention? Because all of us were saying, hey, but why? Maybe I'm coming from a sector that a month was too much, a week was too much, and there was that sector. Maybe because it was a very emotive sector that I was working in. But this one took us, if then the others, what are the time frames for the minister to intervene? Because that is there, and pardon my ignorance, I'm just going to be checking on that. Is there a reflection that at a particular time, then the minister must come in? So if we will, as we go on, we'll try and get that. But the issue of the time frame, because I thought you would say within a particular time, then the minister is to intervene.
Yeah, I'll respond. Chair, there's no time frame. There are two issues that I think that I must preface my intervention in this regard. One is the Constitution and the Bill of Rights within that we have. One section 18 of the Bill of Rights provides the freedom of association. So in a sense, it also answered one of the previous questions in the relationship. Can we limit? Is there an issue of a threshold? We can't limit that. The Constitution provides very clearly that you have section 23 of the Bill of Rights also provides in terms of the right to industrial action, if you will. So unfortunately, the parameters of the Constitution gives us a framework in which we need to do. There's no time frame. A short and long short answer to that is not. There's no time frame. But there are two criteria that the minister needs to take into consideration. One is the effect it will have on the economy. And ministers, for example, raise the issue around trucking and the impact that it would have on the trucking industry. So there's no time frame that the minister can intervene. The minister can intervene immediately. The minister can make an assessment on whether that would have impact, or the minister can, for example, in the mining sector, incidentally, we've written to AMCU and we've published our intention to deregister AMCU if they do not comply with the legislation. My apologies in relationship to that. So we've dealt with those issues. So there's no clear time frame where the minister must intervene. But there are two very clear criteria that the minister needs to take into consideration when he intervenes: is the effect it has on the economy, and two, the effect it has on the lives and the livelihoods of people in this regard.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. We believe that charity begins at home, and indeed, home would also mean the Department of Labour itself. We've conducted the employment equity. We've subjected the department to a DG review. We've done OHS inspections in several offices. Actually, some of our offices remain closed because they're not complying with prescripts of the Occupational Health and Safety Durban Labour Centre is an example. Johannesburg is the other. And Chairperson, last year we conducted an OHS inspection here in Parliament. There was a time when parliamentarians were stuck in the lifts and we had to come in also to conduct that inspection. Colleagues may recall that there was an issue with the Civitas building, the building itself in Pretoria. We were highly involved there because our approach has always been that we would like to assist stakeholders to comply with the prescripts of our law. And with regards to the extent to which we work with the Department of Health, we do quite extensively. For instance, the Department of Health has got a permanent seat in the Advisory Council of Occupational Health and Safety of the department. We also collaborate on special projects. One project that comes to mind is the project that we did in the State of Health and Safety in Gauteng. There was a very close collaboration, and also on issues of the Department of Labor has got a responsibility to ensure that the code of good practice on HIV and AIDS is adhered to. So that's where also health comes in to play a particular role. So in short, yes, they are one of the key stakeholders amongst the many that we have. And we do also have an MOU that we've gotten into with the Department of Health because there are cross-cutting areas within the sphere of health and safety.
No, thank you very much. I think as we will be moving forward in this administration, we will then have to not only portfolio committee meetings, but sessions that will have to, whether you call them workshops, so that we are able to be exposed to some of the issues and not find ourselves either being seen. I was listening to one of the political analysts when he was asked what then becomes the role of the sixth parliament. He then said they must up their game. And I asked myself, oh, maybe we have been observed as members of parliament, some of us that have been here, that we are not upping our game. What really does that mean, the upping of our game? And two is that maybe not now, because there's something that has been raised which is very much came to me very much interesting, the employment of people with disability, in particular mental illness. Now what comes to my mind is that who monitors their treatment, because remember they are to be given treatment. Yes, I'm happy that they are in the work environment, but who monitors them? Because remember that if a person in particular has been diagnosed with being bipolar, but he can still work, who monitors that person takes his or her treatment? So I think that it's going to be, it's another area where I never knew that the department is also doing such a very profound work, because people with mental disorders are always being seen as useless people. So you are then, so the monitoring part of it. Want to comment, and I hope members are to watch TV, because I want to comment what both the security cluster, the Minister of Labour, the Minister of Home Affairs, Police, Transport, around this issue of banning of trucks. But subsequently to that, there was an interview of a person, a foreign national. I nearly fell off my chair when I was listening to what he was saying in terms of some of the things that the minister is trying to justify why foreign nationals are to be in that sector. I said, oh my God, that means we are bordering in being a country that is a banana republic. What that person was really justifying. But the other thing that is very important in this thing of inspections and whatever
Now, I don't know which province is this. A Congolese person has been found a doctor who is practicing, whether without a license or whether he's bogus. So when we're raising these things, we're also going, we must be mindful that we're going to be under very serious attack, being blackmailed politically and ideologically. That was xenophobic. And as public representatives, we have to know that we're going to be subjected to that when we are, for the inspection, honorable members, one thing that we must understand, that inspection is not only going to be a responsibility of the Department of Labor inspectors, but also where in our constituency areas. We are to, when we're conducting our oversight, where we are busy with our constituency work, these are the other things that we are to, because we are to ensure that we draw the attention of the Department of Labor and Employment on some of these things that may be taking place right behind our nose. So I want to take this difficult as it was. I hope when I was deployed in science and technology, my first term here, I was berserk. Berserk because the chair is a nuclear physicist, was. And I have never been in a laboratory. I'm not a scientist. After all the meetings, and I said, Chair, sorry, you have been speaking above my head. I don't know with other members. But as time goes on, we learn. And the only area that we are to ensure that we learn is our interaction with the department. With the understanding, therefore, members, that there are limitations with the interaction with the department. And as time goes on, we will learn on those. And at the particular time, we'll assist one another on what are the do's. There are the do's and the don'ts in terms of public representatives. The unfortunate part, we are governed by some of the things. I know some members become, I was once accused of not wanting members to do ABCD, but I'm governed by rules, unfortunately. But it does not mean that if a member picks up a phone and wants to check on something, we must not do that. Lastly, you have raised something very profound. No, they do come to us, they call us, we call you. People intervened and short circuit. But I think as public representatives, we must always ask ourselves, as if I'm referring a person to you, and within 5 days that matter is resolved, what must come to my mind as a public representative? What about that person who is going to go to UIF offices for more than a year? So we have got that responsibility. If I go to a hospital and say, but what this and that person, what about that person who does not even know the offices of labor in the province, in a particular province? What about that person? What about that person who does not, who is ill-treated? We have got people that are working for us, which are called domestic workers, as public representatives, who are going to be a challenge. It's going to be a challenge. That person who does not even know where an office of the CCMA, when you talk to that person in a manner that is the issue of the decent work. So I'm saying, as we are asking these questions to the ministry and the department, we must also ask ourselves, what is it? Is that person who's assisting me, am I paying that person minimum wage? That's the first question.
So I do think, I was seated one time, I said, I asked myself, DG, if we are to conduct an oversight in this institution and that other side, what are the ministers and the parliament going to? Because we are to conduct that oversight. Charity begins at home. So as we will be moving out, first we are to ensure that our house is in order so that we are then able to ensure that. But in the center of all what now is the mandate and the challenge of this department is the employment part. That's what is going to... The president has thrown a cat within the pigeon. You can imagine, because this thing of employment is really going to be a serious, serious challenge everywhere. So we have got that responsibility. I agree with you, Minister, that together we are to work, together we are to be united, together we will have faith. There are going to be days, I hope that is not going to happen, that we show the department the door. I hope that is not going to happen. I don't believe in that. In my last deployment, I nearly did it. I was cautioned in one of the key Chapter 9 institutions here. But it then means all of us, we have got that. It was an empowering process, eye-opener, hoping that DG and the minister will ensure that we will have to work together. Our budget vote is on the 10th. We will meet next week on Wednesday, if I think it's the old assembly, if I am not mistaken. We are going to meet there in our budget vote. Bear with us. We will speak Greek, Xhosa, Afrikaans, but bear with us, knowing that it is a learning curve. But as the train moves on, I think we will. Honourable members, that comes to the as we are allowing the department to go, I'm humbly requesting members of the committee to remain and the staff. Thank you very much. Until we meet next week on Wednesday.
Hello. Hi.
Can we have lunch and then come back? I'm told lunch is ready. Lunch is served. Then we can have our lunch and then come back.
The problem is I love that.